You're listening to In the Vault, a KPMG banking industry podcast series.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to today's podcast. I'm Liz Lamadou, a principal in KPMG's banking and capital markets tax practice. And today I'm joined by two KPMG banking colleagues. Henry Lacey is a principal in our transaction strategy group, and Brian McDonald is a partner on our banking and capital markets tax team. So welcome, guys.
Hi, Liz.
Glad you could be here. Today, we're going to talk about bank M&A. I want to hear from both of you about what you're seeing in the banking market, maybe just as importantly, what we're not seeing, where we think the market's trending, and why. So why don't we start with a general landscape and a little context. We've got over 4,000 banks, just over 4,000 banks in the U.S., which is down from over 14,000 banks in 1984. So in the last 40 years, the bank numbers have declined by over 70%, mostly due to mergers and consolidations. Since the global financial crisis, we haven't seen many new entrants or bank charters either. So we've had the consolidation without hardly any new ones. And although the U.S. bank numbers have declined a lot, we should note that the other countries really have a fraction of what the U.S. has. So the United States is still significantly more fragmented in the banking landscape compared to other G20 countries. I think expectations were that banks would continue to consolidate. We had some momentum going a few years ago, but then there was significant slowdown in the market, basically starting when interest rates rose. And Henry, I'll let you correct me later if any of that's not true. But mid-2024, and definitely starting in 2025, my sense was that we'd see a pickup in deal activity. And I'm going to let you guys weigh in. I'm not sure we've seen exactly as we expected. So let's begin. Where are we now, Henry?
Yes. So thanks, Liz. So where are we now is a great question. I think what we were anticipating post the change of administration were our clients were certainly beginning to talk to us about an uptick in the deal market. I think what has happened is there are a lot of people preparing for that, getting ready for potential M&A transactions. And we've seen some in the sort of smaller end of the market, sub 20 billion. I think what we have seen is a rather chaotic start to the regulatory landscape in Washington. We still have a number of acting chairs of the regulatory bodies that are subject to approval. And I think banks are just a little bit reticent about coming forward due to the regulatory environment and also due to some of the chaos that we've seen in tariffs being on and off and the markets being reverberating up and down on a daily basis. So people aren't necessarily ready to pull the trigger and commit capital to buying something at this point in time.
That makes sense. And certainly we're seeing impacts of chaos elsewhere. If we look back 12 or 18 months, or maybe even a little bit longer than that, I felt like there was some momentum. Was it in interest rates, or were there some other factors that really started to slow that down?
Post 2020 and the COVID crisis, we obviously saw inflation rise. And to combat that, the Federal Reserve ratcheted interest rates up relatively quickly to a level that hadn't been seen for several years. As a result, valuations increased because there weren't as many banks coming to the market. And there's always an adage in bank M&A that banks are sold and not bought. So, there were many people who were perhaps putting unrealistic valuations on their bank to try and sell them. Also, in a high interest rate environment, borrowing money or going to the markets to fund acquisitions is not necessarily the right thing to do at that point in time. So with falling interest rates and when interest rates started to fall, in the middle third quarter last year, people were expecting the uptick coupled with the new administration. I think, we will see that come, as you say. I expect over the course of the next 12 months, we will continue to see people prepare and the uptick come. But at this point in time, valuations remain pretty hard to achieve. The only other comment I would make is that, many banks are looking for certain niches in terms of things like asset managers or wealth management. And as a consequence, those niches have been valued very highly, which has seen some of the potential buyers out of the market because they don't want to go to those multiples.
And I know you've done some surveys. Is there anything that the bankers themselves are saying?
A good 50% or so of banks are expecting to do some form of transaction in the short to medium term. And that would either be by, you know, a full franchise acquisition, lines of business, new geographies, et cetera. You know, as many banks look across their current portfolio of products, clients and geographies and work out, you know, where they need to strengthen or where they want to grow and become preeminent in their marketplace in that part of their business. So, you know, stepping back, most bank CEOs, CFOs are very much in that space. And certainly at the Acquire or Be Acquired conference earlier this year, you know, the sentiment was very much of, you know, many of the banks, you know, believing that they need to scale up. And, you know, if you look at the marketplace you described at the top of the pod, of the banks we've got, most of them sit in the sort of sub 10 billion scale place. So, you know, we expect that sector to probably reduce by 50% over the next 5 years, from about 4,000 banks to about 2,200 over the next 5 years. So we're potentially going to see a lot of consolidation, you know, in that period across that segment of the market.
Henry, let's talk for a minute about the regulatory environment and the impact that has had over the last few years and you expect will continue to have on the market.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we've seen over the course of the last sort of two or three administrations is, you know, under the Obama administration, we saw the median sort of average of approvals rise to about 255 days. You know, Trump, Trump one brought that down to about a medium of 187 days. But under the Biden administration, that sort of increased by about 40% to 265 days for regulatory approval. So, you know, banks were very, very loath to enter into a transaction they didn't think was going to complete, because obviously the disruption of doing a transaction, you know, is significant. And if you're having to spend 265 days to wait for approval, then, you know, you've got to be sure that it's going to pass muster with the regulators. The acting chair of the FDIC, Travis Hill, has been very clear. He wants to bring that 265 down towards 100 days to try and spur the market. And there was an approval last week, which was granted in 69 days. It was a fairly vanilla approval in that respect. You know, as at the time of recording, we're still waiting for the approval of the Capital One Discover deal. So, you know, I suspect that what will spur the merger market and the acquisition market will be, you know, if the regulators can give a clearer path to achieving shorter lead times. And I think part of that will also be driven by potentially four changes that we're going to see across the regulatory landscape. So the easing of capital requirements, streamlining of the regulatory reviews that the FDIC and OCC proposed in the Bank Merger Act last July, some simplification of the Community Reinvestment Act, and then also potentially some relaxation around the market concentration limits to allow, you know, banks not to necessarily get hung up on concentration thresholds, and so that they can move forward a little bit more quickly. So they're the four key changes we're expecting to see out of the administration, out of the regulatory bodies. And I think, you know, that will then help spur the overall M&A market.
Thanks, Henry. And do you notice a difference overall between large banks, middle market banks, small banks? I know you mentioned the approval that just came through in 69 days was a fairly vanilla approval. Does that have much to do with size?
I think it was size, and there was some question around capital adequacy on one of the parties. So, you know, it was a little bit of a forced merger. I think in terms of when you look across the landscape, it will be interesting to see how this administration reacts. But certainly the big five, the big six banks, I suspect, you know, if Biden had won, he was not going to allow them to grow any further over and above where they'd got to through mass acquisition. How this administration responds to that will be interesting. You know, the the next group and where the analysts feel that there will be the war is, you know, from about number six, number seven, down to about number 35, number 36, which is from about, you know, $700-800 billion down to down towards about $100 billion. So thinking about those banks in that space as they compete to go over the next regulatory threshold and really challenge the global players at the top of the tree, the JP Morgans, the Wells, the Citis, etc. So, you know, we could see some of the very successful super regionals thinking about how they merge themselves up to be a dominant force in the domestic banking and also with designs on a global footprint as they continue to grow. And then as I say, sub that $100 billion level, and you know, when you get down below 10 billion, you know, that's where we see it also a significant amount of activity as though those banks look to increase their return on equity, grow their overall portfolio, particularly if you think about it, many of them are small community banks who you know, maybe are stagnating in their current marketplace. You know, I suspect the impact of some of the Doge cuts and, you know, some of the tariffs will impact their communities. So, you know, making it very, very much more difficult for them to be successful and continue to grow at a rate that, you know, shareholders and the board are comfortable with.
And Brian, I want to turn to you for a minute because I know you spend a lot of time helping banks get ready to sell, helping banks get ready to buy. What are you seeing in the market? And is it consistent with what Henry's been saying? Particularly like to hear what you think about the different size banks and what to expect.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of consistency in what I see in what Henry said before. But I think there are other practical aspects that we see as well. In certain cases, aging shareholder and management bases amongst some of the community and regional banks. Sometimes it has to do with talent and acquiring the right talent and having the right presence in certain key marketplaces. So I think there's a lot of different keys and topics that we see as drivers for discussion here. And you know, I do think, you know, we've seen the push towards efficiency and the push towards a more tech-enabled banking landscape and a banking experience for customers. You know, the customer attitude and appetite has changed for services and having the right technology, you know, perhaps a discussion of the last decade, but one that will continue to be important as banks continue to differentiate themselves in the technology landscape. So while I think that there's certainly, you know, large and major drivers that we see, I think that in a lot of cases that the practical ones are important as well. And I think tend to be a bigger driver in the smaller, more community-based banking landscape.
And I want to turn now to some practical takeaways. So what do you see banks doing right now, Henry and Brian, to get ready, whichever side of the deal they expect to be on?
I think falls into a number of categories. So firstly, a number of banks are thinking about their strategy, you know, where they want to grow, which sectors they want to grow in, which markets, geographies, etc. And they're thinking about dusting off their playbooks if they've got a playbook, or should think about writing a playbook so they can enter into a transaction prepared. And I say that for a couple of reasons. Firstly, you know, an acquirer or even a seller will be much more comfortable in the transaction if they see that you are ready to go. You have the tools and templates in place through a playbook. And it's also, you know, proper to remember that over the past 5 years, there hasn't been as many transactions as there was in the preceding 5 years. So a lot of the muscle memory in the organization has, you know, retired, moved on to new roles, etc. The second thing we see and where companies and banks are thinking about is their overall cost base and cost structure. So, you know, is their cost base sustainable in the event of not doing a transaction? So, you know, looking at their IT costs, looking at some of their outsourced third-party suppliers, you know, do they think about utilizing a global capability hub through a third-party vendor, etc.? So, you know, thinking about that. And then to Brian's point about aging management. So is the next generation of management in place to take over in the event of an acquisition? You know, are they trained and ready to go? And that's a really important factor if you're looking at a category change. So you're crossing into one of the new regulatory thresholds. So, you know, something as simple as is your CFO capable of scaling to running an organization twice the size or a third, you know, an extra third, extra 50% of the size? You know, are your compliance processes right? Are your risk processes right, etc.? And then that comes down to systems and things like that. Finally, in this space, I think, you know, making sure that everybody on the board and your major shareholders are aligned with your strategy and are very supportive of what you want to do. There's nothing worse than getting into a space with an activist shareholder forcing you down a route that you don't necessarily want to go down.
And Brian, would you layer in anything to that specific to tax and how a tax department might get ready in a bank?
I think one thing to remember is that many of these institutions have been gearing up for large scale transactions for a long time. It feels like we've been talking about the next great wave of bank consolidation for the past decade. And market conditions, just generally speaking, haven't been facilitative of that ultimately happening. So to some degree, the banks that have developed M&A playbooks need to dust them off and begin to think about working to execute them. And if this does end up being the way, being in a position where they can execute and they can harvest those efficiencies. As far as the tax department's concerned, tax departments need to continue to work with business leaders to make sure that they're at front of mind when a transaction is taking form. Making sure that they're at the table, identifying risks, identifying the opportunities, and being in a position where they can consolidate and facilitate the active tax optimization of businesses that are acquired. Ultimately, taking in new lines of business, entering new jurisdictions, you know, working with new management and new leaders to take the bank forward into its kind of new and final and hopefully more efficient and profitable form is something that a tax department can do to add value from the get-go, and being involved in a transaction early is typically the most important and the best thing that a tax department can be doing. So staying front of mind with leadership and communicating the risks and opportunities that there are in tax structuring and tax optimization are probably the number one thing that a tax department can be doing right now.
Always better to be in the loop sooner than later. So Brian and Henry, thanks for talking us through this topic today. I think this was interesting. I appreciate you sharing your insights. Definitely helpful context on the current deal market. And as with so many other things right now, we're going to watch with interest how things start to unfold in Washington over the next months. Hopefully what we've been talking about for that decade, Brian, starts to take place. And before we end, I do want to tease another topic. I know, Henry, you mentioned some impacts to banking on the DOGE cuts or on the tariffs. And we didn't have time to cover all that today. But I do want to have you guys back to talk about the impact of tariffs on banking in general, and specifically how we may see that impacting the deal market for banks. So excited to have you guys back again. And to our audience, thank you for joining us today. This is Liz Lamadou on behalf of KPMG's Banking and Capital Markets Tax Practice. I look forward to talking again soon.
Thanks for listening to In the Vault with KPMG. Be sure to subscribe to this series to be notified of new episodes.